Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dover.
This guy exists because of his appeal to racism. Politically, his...
Do you think he's a racist?
I'll let other people use the words they want to use. Anybody that formed their political existence by saying that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, that is how he started his political career. It is not a peripheral thing to me. It is a core of his political efforts. And he has continued to exhibit that. And I'm just saying this, that people across the country have understood that, and that divisiveness is not acceptable in suburbs or exurbs or rural areas across the country. And that's one of the reasons we will do well this year.
Today's guest, Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington and the chair of the Democratic Governors Association, which oversees all the campaigns for the candidates for governor around the country and does a whole lot of fundraising for them. You may have seen Inslee in the news a little last week when he literally stood up to President Trump at the White House using an event from when he was in town for the National Governors Association to make a point about how Trump should, quote, do a little less tweeting and a little more listening to teachers and principals on what to do about school shootings. Inslee told me he thinks Democrats should run on gun control, and he thinks that Democrats should run on just about everything, on sticking it to Trump, moving away from the federal government, and doing things differently in the states. Though, it's more on how he says the Republicans haven't stood up to the president in the ways that he wants. This is not the view of many Republican gubernatorial candidates, I'm sure you'll be shocked to hear. And you'll see that debate play out in the article that's up on the website about this one. So please check that out and see what people like Diane Black, a Republican running in Tennessee, or Bill Schuette, a Republican running in Michigan, have to say about Democrats trying to use Trump against them and why they're eager to see it happen. Which explains why, in the Republican primaries for governor playing out there and elsewhere, candidates are elbowing each other in the face, trying to prove how close they are to Trump. It's a big year, and there are going to be a lot of intense races for House and Senate. But there are 36 states and 3 territories that have governor's races this year, and they're going to be, in a way, more intense, since the stakes are, you could say, higher. Congress gets caught up with everyone boxing each other out to stop stuff from happening, but in the states, in the capitals, a lot is happening. Action on gun control, climate, economic policy, labor laws, job creation, gerrymandering, it's all happening there. And it's been happening there more and more for every year that Washington stays stuck the way that it is. So we've got a lot of governor's races we're going to be zeroing in on over the course of the year on the podcast. And Inslee seemed to me like a good way to get that part of the conversation going. Since Democrats are in such a hole, of the 36 states up this year, only 9 have Democratic governors. They think picking up some ground is inevitable, but it may not be. For example, Michigan and Wisconsin are up, and Pennsylvania has a Democrat who is running for re-election, but that's up too. And those are states that Donald Trump believes he brought about a shift in 2016. Remember to like my page on Facebook at Isaac Dover and follow me on Twitter. But before you do anything else, make sure you subscribed and rated Off Message on Apple Podcasts or however you're listening and spread the word. Among who we've got coming up, Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Congressman and Texas Senate candidate Beto O'Rourke, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and March 11th, live on stage at South by Southwest, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Send me your questions for him and your thoughts on any of these at isaac@politico.com. And now, my conversation with Jay Inslee, who, as we sat down, started talking about singing for some reason, and we just decided to turn on the recorder to capture all of it.
You know, at our Christmas pageant in third grade, we're singing, and the teacher said, stop, 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 right in the middle of the song, stop, stop, stop. She came up and looked at me and said, Jay, we just need you to move your lips and not sing, okay? And I said, sure, teacher.
In third grade?
In third grade. And so I did it. I just dutifully, and I really didn't understand how terrible that was till I was older, till I was maybe 16. Wait a minute. That was scarring for life. Yeah. I should have understood that. I just thought that's the way it worked.
My wife, her family makes fun of her singing, and so she doesn't like to sing, but never a teacher.
Yeah.
A teacher is pretty bad.
Well, she was obviously a very talented teacher because I didn't feel offended at all. I just thought, well, that's the way things are. Some people move their lips and other people sing, and that's just the way the pageant goes. We have a lot of good teachers. She was one.
But nonetheless, you recorded the Carole King song.
I did. I recorded the Carole King Rocky Mountains, company to my friend, a guitar in his recording studio. It was to the tune of the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
And what year was this?
This was probably 8-9 years ago, and she had been involved.
So you're already like deep into public life.
Oh yeah, right. No, I was a member of Congress. Right. I was a member of Congress, but I got to know her because she was advocating a wilderness protection of some of the areas in the Rocky Mountains. And she was a really admirable effort. She personally lobbied just about every single member of the U.S. House of Representatives in this effort. And I've always admired her for that. She just loves the wilderness, and she just worked her fingers to the bone to try to get that bill through.
And, so you sang a song for her.
So I sang a song, and as we said, her response was, Congressman, keep your day job. So she's a good judge of talent.
And that's it. That's the end of your
career. That's
so
the end of my career.
Your singing career is the pageant in third grade to an unreleased Carole King tribute song.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of like my baseball career where I was cut from Little League too. So, I mean, it's been quite a ride.
You're a painter, though.
Well, I'm a doodler. I take pastels and rub them on paper, and sometimes it resembles mountains or something. So
is that like every week you sit down and try to paint?
No. It's when
the inspiration
strikes. The inspiration.
You.
Something comes out of the White House, a tweet that drives me to distraction, and I turn it into a picture of Mount Rainier. So it's a mental health issue.
But the painting started before President Trump.
Yes, it did. I think it's become more vibrant and dynamic and vitriolic as well.
But still in pastel colors.
Yes. In fact, I used to do dormant volcanoes. Now I do active volcanoes to respond to the White House at the moment.
I have not yet heard of somebody translating their view of politics at the moment into pastels.
Well, I'll show you the latest I did of a polar bear. On a collage of torn up New York Times. So you get mad reading the newspaper, you tear up the paper, you make it a collage, and then paint bears on top.
As long as you're not tearing up Politico, it's okay.
No, we don't tear up Politico.
I sometimes ask people about their first jobs. Your first job was painting houses? Is that the right?
Yeah, I learned to work from my dad. He was a teacher, biology teacher and coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was 13, 14, I started painting houses in the summer with him. And those are some of my best days. He taught me how to paint. He taught me how to work, even though you're tired at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. You got to get the side done, you know, before you close the can. He taught me to keep my brush full. That was his big admonition. Son, you got to keep your brush full. It's got to be a full brush to put that paint on. My dad really believed in efficiency. And what that means is having a full brush and just slopping that paint on like you're fighting a fire. And as a consequence, I'd come home covered with whatever color we were painting. We probably got about half the paint we bought on the house. The rest was on me and the rose bushes and the lawn and everything else.
It doesn't seem like a great way to make money then.
It was a great day. Those are some of my best days ever painting with my dad. He was just one of those best dads anybody could have. And the best days of my life was sleeping under an apple tree at noon on a sunny day.
Sounds like from a storybook or something.
Well, I had that kind of – I was lucky in that regard. I was lucky in my mom too. She worked at – Sears and Roebuck, and I did, you know, I've just been very lucky in that regard. And people will tell you those stories about my parents. My parents spent time on Mount Rainier. We talked about Mount Rainier. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first paintings I ever did. They helped.
I don't think that we could have the governor of Washington on and not talk about Mount Rainier.
Well, that's clear.
Times.
That is clear. They did programs on Mount Rainier, getting kids doing restoration of the alpine meadows in Mount Rainier National Park. And we spent a lot of time at Mount Rainier National Park as well with them. And they were very revered people because they helped a lot of kids. My dad helped a lot of kids in trouble on the straight and narrow. And it's one of the reasons I sort of believe in public education because I now meet 70-year-old guys who come up and talk about my dad and said they were about ready to drop out of school. And my old man came up and I always heard the same story that he would turn them around and gently put them up against the lockers. Gently. I'm sure my dad was in compliance with all of the restrictions. And tell him, look, we want you to succeed. And I hear this story over and over. I just run into people randomly. And it's something that makes you pride, but it also makes you realize when you have a good educator, what it can really do to turn around somebody's life. And I've seen that in my state.
It seems like the calmness of that contrasted to how you feel about things these days. You seem like you wake up worried every morning thinking about the environment, thinking about nuclear war, President Trump.
Well, that's just before breakfast, and it goes downhill from there. I don't worry. I just, we have enough I mean, there's so many positive things going on in my state right now that I don't look at my job as dominated by worry. I look at it as dominated by optimism and dominated by action. We're curing cancer in Washington State. We're building the largest vanadium battery that will help integrate renewable energy into the grid. We're growing jobs like crazy. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the history of the state of Washington. We're building we just passed the largest infrastructure package in the history of the state and the greenest transportation package. So we have so many positive things going on, and I get to be active on them. So no, my days are full of hope and action much more than worry. Now, all of us are disturbed by the things we see coming out of D.C., but they have not derailed us. And I think actually the fundamental message that I've shared as chair of the Democratic Governors Association is that President Trump cannot stop us from these positive things. And that's the most important thing we need to realize.
Well, let's talk about the DGA. This is a midterm year. There's a lot of focus on the House, on the Senate, what will happen. Democrats are thinking maybe there's a chance of winning the majority of the House. They're fighting for to at least not lose a lot of seats and maybe pick up one or two in the Senate. Why should anybody care about governor's races? How do you get the attention to them when everybody is thinking about what's going on in Washington?
Well, I think everyone should care about governor's races for a lot of reasons. If you're just thinking about national policies, the governor's races are the keys to the House of Representatives, because the best way to stop the gerrymandering that has shackled the U.S. House of Representatives, have turned it into a place of total inaction and total obstructionism, are elected Democratic governors, because those are the people that can stop the gerrymandering that has so infected our democratic process.
So elect governors instead of – focus on governors instead of House races so that you could focus on House races in a couple of years?
I'm not saying they're exclusive at all. They're not mutually exclusive, but it is clear that in order for us to become – a competitive long-term in the House of Representatives, we have to stop the gerrymandering, which is so pernicious. I call it a cancer in a democracy, and I think that's what it is. In just five states in the Midwest, there are 50-50 split, or 50-50 states. The Republicans are given 27 seats right out of the gate before the race even starts because of their horrific gerrymandering. And the best way to stop that is to elect Democratic governors who can veto maps, who can go to court, who can do what's necessary to stop that gerrymandering process. That's absolutely fundamental. So if you didn't care about your individual state at all, and all you cared about was national policies, I would argue that one of the single most important things you can do is support a Democratic governor, particularly in these states where it makes a difference.
I want to talk about other things too related to this. But in gerrymandering, why should people not assume that the Democrats are going to come in and they'll just gerrymander things their way? That's what happened in Illinois, for example, right?
What I would say is there has been gerrymandering in the last 100 years from both parties. But the circumstance right now is that you just have to write the imbalance that exists. It is clear by any objective measure that the Republicans enjoy a 25 to 35 seat advantage because of gerrymandering. If you find an evidence of gerrymandering in favor of the Democrats somewhere, you will find 10 times that in other states.
That's true. I wonder, there's a race in Illinois this year. Governor Bruce Rauner is running for reelection. Mm-hmm. You are hoping that a Democrat unseats him. Would you make that, whoever that Democratic nominee is, and if that person is elected governor, hold to changing the gerrymandering system in Illinois, for example? And I hold that state up just because it's the one that famously right now is tilted very much towards Democrats.
Well, I will just tell you, I think we, in all of our states, we should have a fair process for districting. I believe in my state, we have a relatively fair system. It's decided by a bipartisan commission. Mm-hmm. It's outside the control of the legislature. It's a fair way to do it. And I would encourage any governor in any state to embrace that. We got to get away from this system that either party can do this. But right now, we know which party has been unfortunately successful at doing this across the United States, and that stranglehold has to be broken. So there are multiple efforts in this regard. There's an effort to have litigation assistance. There's judicial review, but the single most important is to elect a Democratic governor. Now, that's only if all you care about is on the national policy. But if you come on a state-by-state basis, we are the only game in town on making progress. We are the only place, which is governors, where we can actually make progress on climate change policy. It is the only place we can make progress on healthcare. It's the only place we can really make progress on infrastructure, because right now, Washington, D.C., under the control of the Republicans, under the control of a master of chaos in the White House, that is not going to be a place we can look to for relief. So if we want to have a way to move our states forward, it has to be in the state houses with Democratic governors who can move the ball. And so what we are finding, and the DJ has done very, very well in the last year because people are recognizing this. Look, if you want to fight climate change, there's really only one place to do it right now, and that's state by state.
This is something I thought about a lot because it seems like it's a change for Democrats. Democrats used to think about the federal government being where to go to, and we'd hear Republicans right. talk about states' rights.
Right.
And now you have President Trump in, and Democrats all of a sudden say, we don't want to follow the federal government. We're going to do our own thing. There's the Climate Alliance, which you were a big part of getting off the ground. There's now this Guns Alliance, and on other things, on healthcare. It just seems like now it's the Democrats saying states' rights.
Well, you're right, but I would not call it the states' rights. I would just say it's action in the states. We don't need an alliance, and we don't have to argue states' rights. There's no argument about this, that Donald Trump cannot stop us from taking action individually. So in my state, he cannot stop us from adopting
common sense. He can, but isn't the Democratic way to go with the federal government?
No, it should not be. I agree with you, however, that we have awoken to understand this. We should have understood the need for more vigorous governor's race support nationally 10 or 12 or 20 years ago to prevent this gerrymandering crisis. So we're going to adopt some common sense gun safety measures in Washington state, and the Congress cannot stop us. We have the right to do that. They're not even arguing that we don't have the right to do that. We're going to adopt some measures to continue our efforts in marijuana. Our marijuana industry has been very healthy, and we haven't had downsides because of it. And I think over time, the federal government will not be able to stop us. We're going to move forward.
That's not what Jeff Sessions has to say about things.
Yeah, he has not actually stopped us yet. He's done some rhetorical flourishes, but he has not stopped us. We intend to continue in this regard. They can't stop us from moving forward on clean energy. We're growing jobs like crazy. Our clean energy industries are adding jobs at twice the rate of the rest of the economy. And the president can't stop this. He can tweet all he wants till the cows come home that there's climate change is a hoax, but he can't stop us from building jobs in polysilicate and vanadium flow batteries and solar cells and electric cars. So what I would say is it's not an argument about states' rights. It's a recognition of how much action we can bring in our own states.
Gary Herbert, who's the governor of Utah, said to me the other day that it strikes him as circumstantial ethics. He's a Republican. And I said it does seem like there's been a shift on this for the Democrats.
I just saw Gary in the elevator. He's a nice guy.
I don't want to cause problems for you two.
But I have to say I mildly disagree with him. I don't think it's a shift. I would have told you 20 years ago that the state of Washington has the right to have its own gun control laws. It has the right to have its own clean energy laws. It has the right to move forward on health care. No, I don't. I wouldn't agree with him that there's some sort of hypocritical ethical change. There is a new recognition. It's a great awakening that we have to fight on a state-by-state basis. And frankly, the Koch brothers got the drop on us 15 years ago in this regard because they started to aggressively invest in state legislative races and governor's races to try to take over the House of Representatives one state at a time. Mm-hmm. So we finally have awoken to that, and it's a very, very healthy thing.
In 2014, around this time of year in that cycle, the person who was in your position then, who was Peter Shumlin of Vermont, said to me that he thought that if you looked at the states that Obama won in 2008 and 2012 and overlaid that with states that Republicans had won in 2010 governor's races in, that meant that for 2014 it was going to be easy. Ohio, Pennsylvania, these were obvious Democratic pickups. The only Democratic pickup of that, and I think it was seven states, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, I'm forgetting the other two, Maine. The only one that flipped was Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Now you have President Trump has since won, obviously, in Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Why do you guys have a shot at winning in any of those places, do you think?
I think it was a very different algorithm that former Governor Shumlin was looking at. He was looking at past governor's races. We're looking at a current situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's relevant who has won states so much in the past is what the current situation is. And the current situation is that we have Republican governors who are kowtowing to Donald Trump and will continue to do so, who have been lackeys to his abysmal record and his moral depravity and his inhumane policies, and that all across the country, they will be called to account for that chaotic behavior. And that's the current situation. So we shouldn't judge this year's election, what happened in the last cycle, but what we should judge is the current situation. And I will tell you that there is a revulsion against what is going on in the White House right now. And if it's a Tuesday in America for the last year, it's a Democrat getting elected to a state legislative seat.
And 37 flips up.
37 right. seats, and they have averaged in the 70 special elections since Donald Trump took the oath of office. Democrats have improved their performance on average by 10 points. This is in the potential tsunami zone. So, and I don't believe that leopard's going to change its spots at all. And can't. It's constitutionally
capable. You mix the metaphors there, the tsunami and a leopard.
Well, you know, that's the job of politicians. Like we get paid. The more metaphors we mix, it's $5 extra.
The state that I left out of my list was Florida, which Obama won twice, and then Rick Scott won in 2010, won in 2014, despite a spirited challenge from Charlie Crist trying to come back. There's a race this year. Do you guys really have a shot in Florida? Florida's a state that seems like it goes presidential, it goes Democrat in presidential years, and it goes Republican in the off years, the midterm year. But it went for President Trump in 2016.
Very much. We very much have a very good shot at Florida. And I think the best evidence of that is just up the interstate in Virginia, where you saw competitive candidates. And you saw an enormous change in the electorate, particularly in some suburban regions. You saw white college-educated women move 20 points from the previous election cycle. You saw massive turnout in our diverse communities. And you saw a race where the Democrat got more votes ever than any other race in Virginia, and actually more than the governor of New Jersey. So the governor of Virginia got more votes, raw numbers, than the governor of Virginia or of New Jersey. This was a massive change, a 9-point win.
Yeah, so much more than anybody expected.
You're looking at a race at a, you know, not deep southerly state, but Florida has some similarity. But the similarity they have is that a recognition that fundamentally the nation is not built on divisiveness or intolerance or chaos or inhumanity. And those are what Donald Trump now stands for. And you can bet that the Republicans will not be able to, will not be willing to stand up against that. It's been amazing to me, shocking and disappointing that we have so many Republicans who now aspire for governor, who just are afraid and shaking in their boots, that won't stand up against this man in the White House. And when that happens, we're going to do very well, and people are going to come out to vote for Democratic candidates.
You said to me, we were on the phone the day after the Doug Jones won the Senate race in Alabama, and you said to me, it's a 50-state strategy happening organically in this mm-hmm. country, mm-hmm. that Democrats would, like, you didn't even know where people were coming from.
Right.
They're just showing up.
Right.
I wonder, there is a reluctance, it seems, among Democratic leaders to say this is against Trump, to run against Trump, to have an mm-hmm. anti-Trump message.
Uh-huh.
And yet, what it seems like what Democratic voters want is to be against Trump.
So this is a bit nuanced, so let me go through this.
It's okay. We've got time. It's a podcast.
It requires a little thought. It's a podcast. People are thinking people who are listening to this podcast.
I hope.
So,
or non-thinking people. Everybody should listen.
So there's two things at play here. One, a tremendous craving for leadership and action, and a recognition of an absolute absence of action from the White House, an absence of leadership, and in fact, a display of really un-American values of inhumanity and hatred, and trying to fan every chance. Every chance he gets, he tries to divide Americans. And people instinctively rebel against that of all ideological stripes. So you have this great revulsion against him. But what we have found is, and what frankly we're advising Democratic candidates, you don't have to mention it. You don't have to say the word. In an election cycle this year by a Democrat, you need not really even talk about presidential Trump. You need to talk about your plan to help your state improve its economy, create jobs, have better health care and better education for people. And that's what you ought to kind of focus on.
But because people are already there.
They're already there. People, you do not have to convince people that Donald Trump's Twitter habits are not helping America to move forward to a more united people that are more in tune with who we are as a nation.
But it's not just that Twitter, right?
That exists. And it's not just Twitter. It's his policies of every single time. Just one small example. I was here last year at the national conference at this time last year. And the current chief of staff, his current chief of staff told me to my face, John Kelly, you have nothing to worry about with the Dreamers. The president has a big heart. He's a very compassionate man. And we are not going to touch the Dreamers.
Now, I think it's important to contextualize what was going on at that moment, right? So that's the president is about a month, 5 weeks into the job, but he has already signed the travel ban and Washington has already taken him to court, right?
That's correct.
And, and so it's after that happens that John Kelly says to you,
I better make sure that chronology is correct. I can't remember exactly.
The Washington court challenge, all of that happened before the NGA meeting last year.
It was at the NGA meeting that he told me this. And we'd heard the president say, look, I care about these people. They're bright. How could you know, these are bright, up-and-coming young people. They're parts of our community. They're going to our med schools and our law schools. They're becoming teachers. And he wasn't going to touch them. And then he's using them at best as a bargaining chip and wants to throw them out of the country. Now, people by 80-85% majorities in this country understand that is an inhumane policy, and he is using this at best for political purposes to cater to the very base that formed his political existence. Look, this guy exists because of his appeal to racism. Politically, his—
Do you think he's a racist?
I'll let other people use the words they want to use, but I'll tell you this.
Anybody, but that's— Why won't you go that far, though?
I'll tell you why. Anybody that formed their political existence by saying that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, that is how he started his political career. It is not a peripheral thing to me. It is a core of his political efforts. And he has continued to exhibit that. And I'm just saying this, that people across the country have understood that, and that divisiveness is not acceptable in suburbs or exurbs or rural areas across the country. And that's one of the reasons we will do well this year. But what I'm saying is, you don't have to even talk about that. People get it. They know it. What we need to talk about are our plans to help get better schools for our kids, better roads, better bridges, better jobs for our people. And that's what we need to focus on.
And not throw the red meat that the base wants.
I don't think you need to. Now, you have to stand where you are. You need to speak out against the racial division that he has caused. You need to make sure that we stand up to not allow him to throw Dreamers under the bus. You need to stand up for doing something for climate change. We need to stand up to say you're not going to drill off our coastlines. He wants to drill off our coastlines. We have our pristine beaches, and he wants to expose Washington beaches to oil spills, which for decades has been a bipartisan position in my state and most states, that we're not going to drill off our coastlines. But then, just as part of a political little deal, he wants to help his buddy down in Florida who's running for the Senate. He exempts Florida from—
You think that that's what was going on there?
I don't know how else to explain it. What are the rationale? We both have beaches. We both have shellfish industries. We both have tourism industries. Why is he exposing Washington state beaches to tar balls when he lets Florida off?
And it's not just, by the way, it's like all the coast.
It's all the coast.
States,
and by
right?
the way,
and the only one that has the exemption at this point.
That's correct. Right? And there are Republican governors who are as offended as I am in this regard. They're not, but they're voting for him. They're offended, but they're still supporting Donald Trump and they're afraid to stand up to him.
One of the special elections that Democrats flipped was a seat in the Washington State Senate. You got majority control for Democrats in the state Senate, which has been closely divided for a long time in Washington State. And that puts the entire state government in the hands of Democrats. It has made you guys able to move quickly on a number of things. I hear from some Republicans that they think that there will be a backlash to that, that there will be that's like overreach and that Republicans are going to get elected now because of that. This year, you don't seem convinced by that based on your faith.
No, I think—
I mean, is there a future for Republicans in Washington State?
At least one, just for exhibition purposes, to make us look good. No, we feel very good about our prospects this year. We are embracing, and I'll tell you why. And it's kind of a microcosm of the national politics because we have been able to open up the floor to action in our Senate because we did win one seat. It's the only place where we flipped the legislature in the country this year. Because of that, we were able to have a bill this year to pass the Voting Rights Act so we can get more access to the ballot box because of that. Because of that, we were able to have a bill to have pay equity to women that the Republicans have blocked. Because of that, we've been able to have a bill to have reproductive parity for women so women are not denied access to reproductive freedom. Because of that, we've had a vote on the death penalty. Because of that, we're having votes on a clean energy plan to help grow jobs forward. Because of that, we got a capital budget, which is $4 billion worth of work in our state. So it very much opened the gates that were closed previously, somewhat similar to Congress, where I don't look at this as left or right. I look at this as action or no action.
Leftward action.
It is action to deal with our challenges. Look,
but it's
we
have
challenges.
It's not like bipartisan action. It's democratic action. It's democratic ideals. But right, there's nothing.
Yes, but I would argue that it's more than that. It is no action versus action of any sort. Let me give you an example.
So it certainly got past the gridlock of
correct. The happened, gridlock right? is broken. So we know we have a problem with climate change. So we are adopting solutions. The Republicans want zero solutions, zero action, gridlock, and just have the special interests prevent any positive action. On gun safety, we know we have a problem with gun violence. It is the Democratic Party that is bringing solutions forward on gun violence, and we'll be passing some in my state. But that is blocked by the NRA and their folks, their friends in Congress. It is action on infrastructure where we are moving. Look, we passed the largest
infrastructure. I mean, it's sort of like the laboratory of the resistance kind of thing at this point yeah. in Washington, right?
Well, you could look at it that way, but it's not just resistance. It's a laboratory of positive forward movement. I would argue, and I think that that's a fair statement. And what I'm trying to say is, I guess that to some degree, it's not so much a debate between plan A or B, it's a plan between plan A and nothing, because that's what the Republicans have offered. They're not offering us a real solution on infrastructure. They're not offering us a solution on climate change. They just denied its existence. They're not offering a plan really seriously what to do about gun violence. We're bringing solutions to the table, and that's why Democratic governors, I think, are going to do well this year, because we want to bring solutions to the table.
Would you advise candidates for governor to run on strengthening gun laws in this country?
Yes, I would. And I think there are so many common sense things that have the vast improvement of vast swaths in every state, in every county, I would argue. I mean, how can you argue that bump stops should be legal, that we should have automatic, you know, fully automatic machine guns? How can you argue that anywhere in America? How can you argue anywhere in America that you can't buy a pistol till you're 21, but on your 18th birthday, you can leave your birthday party and go out and buy a fully automatic weapon by buying a semi-automatic long gun, then put a bump stock on it. You got a fully operational machine gun at age 18. How can you argue that that's a good public policy?
I mean, the argument there would be that Ralph Northam and Phil Murphy were both pretty forward along on the spectrum toward gun regulation, and they both won by large margins. Northam won in Virginia, which is not the home of the NRA is what all the right. Gun regulation advocates would say about it. So even in states that have a stronger gun culture, you think that
I think that's true. Now it may be of different intensities,
right.
And it depends what you're talking about. But these things are the things we're talking about at the moment are so modest and so common sense. And we have to recognize that I do believe the consciousness of people is changing. You are seeing some Republicans starting to run for the hills on this. You saw it for Governor Scott, who, you know, for decades has refused to do anything. Now, all of a sudden, he wants to be for gun safety, which is great. That's, you know, wonderful. But I think you're seeing the voice of young people that is inspiring this debate, and young people are refusing to take no for an answer. And we're moving. And I just tell you, in my state, the Republicans, you know, refuse still to embrace any gun safety. But we've passed two initiatives now in the last 3 years by overwhelming margins that have passed in almost every single county in my state. And we're a diverse state. We have urban and rural areas. We have red and blue counties. But those initiatives passed on every single one of those to close the gun show loophole and to allow people to get protection orders to prevent people who shouldn't have guns from having them. So this does have broad support. And again, it comes down to Democratic governors who are standing up for action and Republicans who are standing in the courthouse door just taking orders from the NRA. And that's what they do.
President Trump, you see him in very negative terms, don't think of him as any respectable in any way, right? At least as a person. And you've not dealt with him, though you're a governor of a state. How do we bridge this, or do we not?
Well, we elect Democratic governors. I mean, that's the number one antidote to this problem that is available to us right now. And the reason that is important is because Democratic governors in every state in the United States can act to counterbalance, stop the horrific things the president wants to visit on our states, and start actually doing positive things. And that's positive. By the way, he is doing things that hurt my state right now. He's trying to destroy the solar industry. He's got a boneheaded tariff policy that's going to cost 24,000 jobs, many in my state. He is hurting my state. And so the antidote to that is to elect, have a Democratic governor and as many legislators as mm-hmm. you can to block those things and move forward, which we can do.
When he was considering what to do about the Paris Agreement, environmental action is a big cause of yours and mm-hmm. has been for a long time. Did you ever think maybe I should try to call him up and lobby him?
No, and Al Gore lobbied him, and mm-hmm. Al is a great friend, and I have huge respect for him. But I remember him saying, geez, maybe there's some hope here. I thought
during the transition.
I thought that was probably more hope that was warranted, and unfortunately, that's been the case. He has, again, sort of like what he did by calling President Obama born in Kenya, he's had the same attitude to the science of climate, which is to ignore reality and ignore the science.
I wonder, we are told by scientists it's sort of an existential moment here. President Obama used to say, and he said it about signing the Paris Agreement in the first place, that it was about doing this now because otherwise it might be too late. Mm-hmm. So now we're the only country that is not on the Paris Agreement, despite what you are doing in your state and others in the Climate Alliance to still move in that direction. Do you think that this country cares enough about climate change that it could be a national political issue, that somebody, let's say, could make it the cause of a campaign?
Definitely. And it is a very positive thing. It wasn't my election. I was elected on this issue in part because I said we had a vision of a clean energy economy. We're going to grow jobs. We're going to help the future of our grandkids. And I was elected, and we're doing that now in the state of Washington.
But people would say that's Washington.
I think it is true all across the country for this reason. People all share some deep-seated view that they care about their kids and their grandkids. And this is a threat to our kids and our grandkids. It is a moral and it's something deep in our hearts. That's something that unifies people, that recognition that fundamentally that's sort of our greatest asset and thing we care about and thing we owe a protection to. So that's number one, and it exists across the nation. Number two, we are an optimistic nation. We are a kind of a can-do nation. You know, we've created, it's what we do as a nation, it's what we do in my state. And when you appeal to that optimistic, positive vision, that is something that's very appealing to people across the country. And that is what we can do when we talk about it in that fashion. The third thing is that people are now seeing this tragedy unfold before their eyes. They're seeing it daily. They're seeing the fires and mudslides in California. They're seeing the hurricanes that have so ravaged us in the rainfall of biblical dimensions in Texas. Yesterday in the North Pole, it was something like 25 or 40 degrees above average temperature. So this is no longer a peripheral abstraction for people. It's something that they really recognize. And I think there's points where things change. And I think we're getting to that tipping point right now in climate change. And it has to happen now because we don't have a lot more time.
All right. Well, this is Politico, so I'm obviously not going to let you off the hook without asking you the question of what that means for you. There's been some chatter that you might run for president. Are you interested in that?
I'm interested in doing what I'm doing, and I know you've heard other people say that, but it is true because I've got the greatest job in the world. Look, I mean, we're curing cancer in Washington State. We're building a new system so people can have Wi-Fi. Elon Musk is doing the satellite system so you can have Wi-Fi around the world. We're building a clean energy economy like crazy. There's so many great things going on in my state right now that I like this job.
But your term is up conveniently in 2020.
My term could be up as long as the people accept me. We don't have term limits.
Right, but you would think that you'd run for re-election instead of running.
I have plans to be governor because I love the job, and I feel that I've brought some things to the table for my state.
All right. Well, it's not quite an answer, but I guess we'll have to stay tuned.
We got to sell more of your shows here. Well, there is a future.
Listen, if you're ready to run for president, we'll have you back on.
Whatever it takes to get on your show.
Governor Jay Inslee, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks a lot.
Well, if he runs for president, hopefully we'll come back. And maybe I'll get him to sing that Carole King tribute song. I didn't ask him to, and after the microphones turned off, we tried to get it back to him to do a rendition, but couldn't get the schedule to match up. For those of you who'll be in Austin at South by Southwest on March 11th, please join us for my off-message live conversation with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which we'll then have up as an episode on March 13th for everyone who can't be there. And email your questions for him, and I'll try to work them in. Remember to subscribe for all those great conversations coming up. Long list, but people like Pete Buttigieg, Matt Gaetz, Beto O'Rourke, Ricardo Rosello, and many more. And rate us. It really does help get Off Message out to more people. And catch you next time on Off Message.